What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, a special edition of the show after a historic week in which the president bolsters the alt-right and white nationalists. Why does he end the week? By getting rid of Steve Bannon, the alt-right crusader in his White House. It's Friday afternoon, August 18th. Maggie Haberman, this seems like a shocking end to this week in particular. The president has outraged much of the country with his comments about the protesters in Charlottesville and his statement that some of them are fine people. And that seems like a big victory, in a sense, for Steve Bannon, like the potentially the biggest realization of his vision in this presidency. And yet, on the last day of the week, Steve Bannon is out. So what is going on?
It's an excellent question, Michael, and thank you for having me. This has been a bit of a crazy day. There are a couple of different versions of this story going around. In one version, we have White House officials who don't like Steve Bannon, saying that the president had wanted to fire him for several weeks around the time he fired Reince Priebus, that he was talked out of it by several people, and that General John Kelly, who replaced Reince Priebus as chief of staff, had been, quote-unquote, evaluating the tenure. Bannon has told people close to him that he offered his resignation on August 7th to go into effect on August 14th, except that it was delayed because of Charlottesville. That's not, I think, accurate. As I understand it, there's a third way here, which is there was some deal between the president and Bannon for Bannon to leave late last week. And that deal was shelved, iced, what have you, amid Charlottesville. And Bannon, as you know, was the only person who was really telling Trump what he wanted to hear the weekend of Charlottesville, which was, don't give in, you are correct, pay attention to the heritage of these protesters who are interested in preserving a certain culture and a certain mindset. And that, I think, bought Steve Bannon some time. One person told me that Bannon had used the weekend to try to say, essentially, that the deal needed to be renegotiated in terms of his departure, and was pulling it along. I think the president was open to that. I think that John Kelly was far less so, especially after Bannon gave this unplanned and unexpected interview to the American Prospect, a liberal website, in which he laid out, you know, his own dovish vision of how to handle North Korea that basically suggested the president was bluffing, in which he disparaged Gary Cohen, the chief economic advisor to the president, disparaged other members of the administration, talked about the deals he would accept, describing himself as almost on par with the president. It was widely seen in the West Wing as impossible for Bannon to stay on after that. And candidly, there was a bit of pathology, it seems, around it. There's a term for it in law enforcement, suicide by cop, where you essentially try to get yourself killed without doing it yourself. Whatever was going on, this has been in motion for several days.
Let me try to make sure I understand something you said about last week. Why would Steve Bannon be in position to be fired or to have negotiated his exit last week before Charlottesville?
The president had started thinking, about doing it a couple of weeks ago initially, and he was talked out of it by people who told him, if you do this, this is going to roil the base, and it will be very problematic for you. All of these sort of suppositions that Steve Bannon was the puppeteer behind the president have made the president very unhappy.
So, Maggie, I want to return to something that you just said, which is that Bannon was the one person in the White House encouraging the president to keep going with his provocative comments about Charlottesville. The president said at his Tuesday press conference, and I think it was actually your question, if I'm remembering it.
Can you tell us how you're feeling about your chief strategist, Mr. Bannon? Can you talk about that?
I would echo Maggie's question. Steve Bannon has
come. I never spoke to Mr. Bannon about it.
Is that not true in the end?
That's not true. He has spoken to him about it, both now and during the campaign.
Given what you just told me, how influential was Steve Bannon in this historic, extraordinary week when it came to Charlottesville.
Look, he was certainly influential in validating the president's own impulses, and that has really been Bannon's main leg to stand on. Over and over again, as he has gotten in trouble, it's that he is the person who validates how the president sees things. That's pretty key when the president is constantly being told that he has to change. And so when you have one person saying, yeah, the way you're doing it is great, that person looks pretty good in your eyes if you're Donald Trump.
But what we're talking about are the president's impulses, right? Sort of buttressing white nationalism, poking his finger in the eye of the left. That's not necessarily Steve Bannon's. I think that's been confusing for people.
I think that the president has a certain set of base impulses that he relies on. I think that Bannon shared them. I think that he perhaps took too much credit in Trump's mind for shaping them.
Does Bannon leaving at the end of this week, Maggie, does it have anything to do with Charlottesville?
It does, only in the sense that they are so aware in the White House that they have botched this, that the president botched this, that Tuesday was just a mess, and that the one person who didn't think it was a mess was Bannon.
Right. That face that John Kelly was making in the news conference, or the multiple faces he made, was
That's right.
indelible.
And you know, his frozen visage, to your point, just, you know, sort of looking down at his shoes, arms tightly crossed. Every reporter in the room was stunned by what we were seeing. And there was only one person who thought that this was a good thing. Kushner, I know, had told people that Bannon plays to my father-in-law's worst instincts.
That's an incredibly memorable thing to have said.
Mm-hmm. So I think that that's just important to bear in mind.
Maggie, you mentioned John Kelly. We just talked about how miserable he looked during this news conference, and you were probably like 50 feet away from him, the new chief of staff. How much did he have to do with Steve Bannon now being forced out of the White House? We know he came in and was able to get rid of another controversial figure, Anthony Scaramucci, really quickly.
I think that John Kelly has basically told the president that there has to be a series of processes in place and that you need to follow and listen to those, and that's a real thing. I think that Kelly helped push it along. I think this was going to happen one way or the other.
So, Maggie, you have the ultimate inside access in this White House. Can you take us through what you know about exactly how this all went down? And where do we even start the clock?
Look, I mean, I think that this has been going on for quite some time, this devolution, but I would start the clock in April when Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner had their falling out. And Ivanka Trump was pointing out to her father that Breitbart.com was running all kinds of negative stories about Jared.
Just remind me of the fallout with the president's son-in-law.
Sure.
Seems like a bad person to have a falling out with.
Well, yes. I mean, the two of them had really been joined at the hip during the transition. And after that all, you know, sort of took place and they came into office, there was a fraying. Jared Kushner was interested in initiatives that Steve Bannon wasn't. He was pushing people who Steve Bannon didn't like, like this Goldman Sachs contingency. Bannon formed a very strange alliance with Reince Priebus. Priebus was afraid that Gary Cohen, the National Economic Council, was being groomed to be the next chief of staff, and Priebus was very threatened by that. So the two of them sort of joined together to fend off the others. Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump came to believe that Bannon was leaking against them. He had denied this, but it helped add to a lot of high levels of negativity. And that was the first time that Trump warned Bannon, I want this stuff stopped.
Right. That was the cut it out. That was the famous cut it out moment.
Yep. That's right.
And was it cut out? Was it cut out?
Well, they didn't become best friends again. So here we are.
To that point, do the president and Steve Bannon like each other? Did Trump, in other words, just have to do this kind of against his will? Does he actually still quite admire and like Steve Bannon?
He was ready to get rid of Bannon, but I think he fears Bannon a little bit. And he is certainly aware of the damage that Bannon can do from the outside.
And tell me a little bit about that.
Look, I mean, you know, Steve now can stoke up Breitbart.com, the website that he ran until he joined the Trump campaign, which has taken the lead in attacking a lot of key administration officials, including Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump. He can spread all kinds of whatever. It's not clear how much he knows about what has gone on over the last 7 months. Remember, this is a White House that is under active investigation.
Okay, so I want to take on this fear that you just raised in a couple different parts, starting with Breitbart. On Friday afternoon, after the news was announced that Steve Bannon was leaving the White House, a Breitbart editor tweeted a single word: war. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that they're all looking to turn Steve Bannon into a martyr and try to rally their base, literally, in support of him. I don't really know what war looks like. It's not exactly like that site is genteel on most days. So I don't know how different this is going to look.
Right.
But I think that they are at least temporarily threatening to ratchet up the pressure against Gary Cohen, against Jared Kushner.
But Breitbart's generally supportive of the president, right? And the idea that it might turn on the president feels really still kind of not radical, but really unexpected.
You know, look, I mean, I think that they had a marriage of convenience, right? Trump might have these nativist impulses, but he also takes a lot of positions that are antithetical to what they believe. If you ask Trump what he believes at heart, he believes that people should be covered by some kind of health insurance, even if it's public.
Right. It's incredibly complicated because Breitbart received what seems to amount to an incredible gift from the president this week in the form of, of his remarks in Charlottesville.
Right. Well, but they like to believe and sell the idea that they created him, and that is not true.
Okay, turning to the Russia investigation, we know that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, and his team of investigators have been interviewing or trying to interview other White House officials who have been fired, like Reince Priebus, the former chief of staff, as part of their investigation into ties to Russia. So it sounds like you think there's a threat here, too, with Bannon.
I think it is very risky for the president to have all of these potential witnesses who could walk across the street, not literally, but could conceptually walk across the street to Robert Mueller's office and speak to them about what they know. I think that is a risk. I think that Bannon has told people that he plans on remaining on great terms with the president, but we'll see what that translates to. And to be clear, the president has said that he did nothing wrong, and there is no evidence otherwise. This investigation, though, is continuing.
So, Maggie, what do you expect Steve Bannon to do on the first day of the rest of his post-White House life?
I think that he'll probably have a really nice dinner with someone and be very happy that he is no longer wed to government rules. And then I expect he'll be back at Breitbart.com pretty soon.
Hmm. Do you think the threat of him to the White House is real?
Yes, I do. Not to the president, but to other staff members. I don't think Bannon's going to burn the whole house down, but I think he might burn certain elements of it down.
But Maggie, is there a possibility that Bannon could actually be useful to President Trump outside the White House?
Oh, there is no question about that. Bannon could be very helpful in terms of building alliances with the base on certain policy initiatives. It could be very helpful, particularly, I think, in frightening lawmakers who don't really fear Trump, frankly, into going along with the administration's goals. But I think it's a limited amount of power. There's nothing more powerful than being inside the White House. And if you can't maximize that and effectuate that, that's really on you.
Maggie, I have an image in my head of a dry erase board in Steve Bannon's office where he wrote down all the promises that Donald Trump had kept during the campaign. And I kind of always thought of Steve Bannon as the kind of promise keeper. And he's got a staff full of people who I think see themselves as the kind of conservative nationalist promise keepers. So two questions. One, are a bunch of those people going to leave the White House with Steve Bannon? And if that happens, who's going to keep those promises from the campaign that those who are left in the White House might look askance at?
It's an excellent question, and when I ask that question, the answer I've gotten is Donald Trump. The point being that Trump actually ultimately always has been his own chief strategist, that Trump marinates in these promises in a very similar way, and that Bannon's allies within the White House were not actually that deep.
So when it comes to Bannon, Maggie, whether or not this goes well for Trump depends on what, do you think?
I think that as long as Bannon feels like he's being listened to, I think that's going to matter a great deal. I think that Breitbart needs to be careful how hard it goes after the president's children. I think that there will be an end to the president's patience on that front. But I think that's basically it. And then I think Bannon needs to not have anything negative about him come out in the interim. A lot of people have been scratching around at Steve Bannon's background and what he's been doing, and it's not as if the camera is not staying on him.
I wonder to what extent, Maggie, this was all preordained by the fact that when you talk about Steve Bannon, you're dealing with a figure who ran a news organization that was committed to blowing up the Republican Party, ran a campaign that was devoted to exposing what he saw as its fraudulence, and who seems to have rebellion in his DNA.
I think it's a great way of framing it, and I think it's true. Look, this is going to sound like horn tooting, and that isn't what I mean. But I had a strategist friend message me right after we reported that he was gone, mm-hmm. saying, "You said to me back in January that he would be gone by mid-August."
You predicted this back in January?
I did. Because I think he always knew that he had a limited amount of time to get things done. He just was never going to fit in right there. The White House is still the White House, and it's just a very different scenario. So I think some of this was inevitable. But look, I also think that the White House is an incredibly powerful drug that is really hard for people to let go of. Hmm. And I think Bannon is going to find that once his sense of liberation evaporates.
So finally, Maggie, Steve Bannon, out of this job, at this moment, does this end the alt-right camp inside this White House? Is this going to be a dramatically different White House with Steve Bannon gone?
No, because Trump needs a Steve Bannon. And before there was Steve Bannon, there was Roger Stone. Hmm. And before there was Roger Stone, there was Roy Cohn. And I mean, there is always someone right. playing this role, encouraging Trump's more, sort of darker impulses.
Right, the provocative whisperer, right.
Right. And so it's not... I know we're reducing it to some kind of a policy frame, but in reality, it's just something that feels kind of dark. And Trump always needs that person around.
So who plays that role now?
I don't know, but he'll fill it. I don't know who's going to be in the... I don't know who the casting call is going to include, but it will include someone. And it'll include Donald Trump. I mean, this is... He will start listening to himself more and more.
Thank you very much, Maggie. Hope you don't get stuck in traffic on the way back from Jersey.
No, I won't. I'm not coming back till tomorrow, honey. I'm living here now forever.
Okay, bye. Since we recorded this interview, Steve Bannon has returned to Breitbart News as executive chairman and oversaw Breitbart's editorial meeting on Friday night. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.